will end it after the shovel, or will it? Miami running around, circling. Oh, look out! Gronkowski didn't have the angle! Touchdown! Oh, can you drink? A miracle!
Hello, welcome to the Dolphin UK podcast. Yeah, with you for our season review episode, as we kind of trailed last week, joined by a really special guest as well. So I'll start by bringing him right in. Jason, Finn Maniacs, how are you doing, mate?
Hey, Andy, thank you so much for having me and staying up late. I know you guys are out on the other side of the pond, so I appreciate you making a little twilight episode for me, and I'm thrilled to be a part of the show.
Nice one. Thanks for joining us, mate. Really happy to have you with us, and obviously joined by Lee and Si as well, as always. Si, how are we doing?
Yeah, good. Thanks, Andy. And yeah, I just wanted to extend a warm welcome to Jason also. I feel like we've traded for a franchise quarterback just for one show only. So welcome, Jason.
Oh, no, thank you, Simon. That's a lot of pressure, man. You guys are going to have a show next week, and with the rumors going on, you're going to get another guy and train me. I don't know. So I appreciate that.
Lee, all good with you, mate?
Yeah, all good. Yeah, ready for this, though. There's a lot for us to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we already had a little back and forth on the WhatsApp chat, didn't we? But we'll get to that. So I'll kick off then, though, with some nice news to start with. Like two first-team All-Pros in Xavier Howard and Jason Sanders, and Jakeem Grant, a second-team All-Pro, and that's a kick returner as well. So, you know, nice to get some recognition for a Dolphins team that did really well this season, and a nice bit of positivity to end with. Jason, I'll throw it your way as you're the guest to start with. Are these the right guys to be All-Pros? Have we missed anyone out? Or, you know, are they obviously the ones that excelled over the season? They're the ones that deserve to be in there.
Obviously, Xavier Howard and Jason Sanders absolutely deserve to have these All-Pro honors. Xavier Howard had a season to probably be remembered as one of the best, if not the best, cornerback season in Miami Dolphin history. And in terms of the overall NFL landscape, he had double-digit interceptions for the first time since Antonio Cromartie about over a dozen years ago, or just at that around. So he is 100% deserving, including a potentially Defensive Player of the Year award. So let's hope for that. And Jason Sanders, all he did was the only AFC kicker to be 100% perfect in point after attempts. And you think that that's an easy thing, but the only other person in the NFL was Will Lutz. So two people perfect all year. And then I think he only missed two or three field goals, 40, 50 yarders. So absolutely deserving. And Jakeem Grant, second team all pro. How about it?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Lee, coming your way, obviously we've been critical of Grant at times this year, but you can't deny that he's kind of grown as a kick returner and a punt returner.
No, I mean, it's definitely, I mean, we've said it a few times, we've talked about his hands, but as a punt and kick returner, he does a superb job and, you know, it's recognised. I think that's great.
Do you think that keeps you on the roster?
Yeah, I think that's, to me, that's his best route to keeping a job. Because I think, even as it stands right now, I don't think, ideally, he's starting if we were playing this week. Because I think, ideally, you'd be running out Parker and Williams on the outside. And, you know, we know Grant doesn't play as well on the inside. So, you know, and it comes across as a great guy. The interviews I've seen with him and stuff, it's nothing personal. Just, you know, his hands aren't the greatest. But punt and kick returning, 100%.
Yeah, I like it. And so, coming your way, I mean, anyone else that was deserving of these kind of honours that they've missed out?
Well, they're the two obvious candidates, aren't they? And I have to say, they're certainly more meaningful than the Pro Bowl honours that were given out several weeks before. And thankfully, Jason Sanders actually made it in this time because it's much deserved. It makes up for his Pro Bowl snub, which actually, on the face of it, doesn't really mean a great deal. It's the All-Pro honours which are the meaningful awards.
See, and Blankenship beat him to the Pro Bowl, didn't he? And he missed a couple of vital kicks at the weekend. So I guess we'll wait for next year to Sanders to come up clutch instead when he makes that next year. Go on, then I'll move on to the bit that's going to be the controversial bit, just because I've been waiting for it. It's all good. Obviously emerged on kind of Twitter. I mean, I don't know how much of this is kind of face value and that sort of stuff. I think it's kind of maybe Deshaun Watson's made a throwaway comment that he'd be happy to go to Miami and everyone's overblown it. But got to talk about it, haven't we, guys? Can't really avoid it. It's a big a point of debate amongst Dolphins fans at the moment. Would we trade Deshaun Watson for Tua plus some kind of compensation as well? You know, take on that contract from Watson, but obviously get one of the best quarterbacks in the game in return. I'll come back to me in a minute because I think I'm going to wind some people up with my kind of opinion on this. But Lee, I'm going to throw it your way first, and then maybe Jason coming off the back of you. Tell me what your opinion is, and you know, like, is there any kind of situation where you would do this trade?
So I completely understand why people are getting super excited about it. You know, quarterbacks don't come available, but I'd also preface that by saying he's not available. Him saying he wants to, he's willing to waive his no trade clause to join the Dolphins. I'm sure we could ask a lot of players in the NFL that right now, and we'd get the same answer. This is a team on an upward trajectory. Do you know what I mean? You know, I've got a whole bunch of feelings about this. I mean, I don't think it's as much about Watson as it is about Tua for me. I'm happy, I'm willing to ride that train, use the picks and build that team. And I think your best window to win is with quarterbacks on rookie deals. The few problems I have with the reports that are out right now is, like I say, Deshaun Watson saying he wants out doesn't mean the Texans are willing to deal him. Doesn't mean it's going to be cheap or easy, because if you think that that starting price is anything less than what we got for Laramie Tunsil, I think you're absolutely crazy, because yes, he's disgruntled. Yes, that means he's got some leverage, but at the same time, he's still a top five quarterback, you know, top 10 quarterback. You don't just give that up for nothing, whether he's upset or not. I think there's plenty of ways for the Texans to fix it before it gets to that stage. I think that it's such a deep pool of ifs and buts. But I mean, for me, I'm happy to stay. This has been a 2-year plan for Miami, even before Tua was on the team, to get Tua, to put him in this situation, to build this draft capital for exactly this situation. And everything has panned out exactly the way we'd planned it. I don't understand why you take a deviation now because somebody became available. We could make the same argument that a wide receiver becomes available or a corner becomes available. You know, you can run for any position. Also, from a kind of fit point of view, if Deshaun Watson's unhappy where he is, and he was unhappy with the way Bill O'Brien ran the team, and he's unhappy that they've brought in another New England guy, I'm not sure Miami is necessarily the greatest destination for you. You know, if you're going to be unhappy because you're not consulted, I don't know if this is the right front office and head coach for you, because you know, they've kind of got that similar way about them. And on that note, it's okay. Deshaun's saying, I'm willing to waive my no trade clause to go to Miami. If you're that desperate to get out of Houston, you'd waive it to go anywhere because you want to get out of Houston. So it's all right saying, I want to go, but I don't want to go somewhere better. Well, hey, we all want to go somewhere better. You know, that's just the way it is. But yeah, I mean, as I say, I don't want to, I could go on for hours, but.
Too much logic, mate. Too much logic you've got there. Jason, what's the feeling that side of the pond, mate?
A lot of split. And that's really just how it is, you know, in this Dolphin Nation, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, I'm going to do like a little bit of a hedge of my bet here, my answer, because like Lee said, who made so many great points, there's a lot of pluses, minuses, ins and outs that have to happen over the next 3 weeks, 3 months that will lead us to that. Am I on a side of the fence? I'm on the pro sticking to the plan side with Tua and the draft picks. And Lee, you hit the nail on the head with the organization. This organization is not going to bring in a player and then consult with the player. What do you think we're going to do? That's the last thing that's going to happen. Is Deshaun Watson an elite quarterback? Absolutely. No argument there. But the Dolphins are really kind of in year 2.5 of their plan. They were in year 2, but won 10 games. So you got to give them a little bit of more credit than they deserve there. And now you have a third pick, an 18th pick, a 35 pick, a 50 pick. You're not giving those all up for one quarterback who Lee referenced. it could be disgruntled if it doesn't work out. You got to win 13 games. You got to win a Super Bowl, or else in 2 years, you're in salary cap crisis. Or if you win a Super Bowl and you don't win two more, might be a failure with a $156 million quarterback. Give me 10 years of constant success right now. And that's what I think the Dolphins are building with Tua.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, where I'm coming from, I think it's the kind of proven talent versus the hypothetical talent for me, which I know a lot of people are saying it, but the kind of excitement of that player becoming available and Lee rightly pointed out to me several times the other day, had a fantastic season, but they still only won four games. So that's obviously the sticking point here. But I think if you get that elite player, you don't necessarily have to take on the full contract. I think I read somewhere that you're only taking on about, you can come in immediately.
No, it's fine.
No, go on. I was going to say, you only take on 10 mil of the contract next year. And then obviously you take the full whack of it the years after and stuff like that. What's to stop the restructure in the meantime? And also, I get what people are saying. Draft capital would rather be spent on young, promising talent, and you know, where's the cap space going to be? But you can definitely find a way to bring in someone like Will Fuller, even if you bring in Watson, and thus, you know, for me, that's not really too much of an issue. My issue mainly is that, like, the kind of team building philosophy here is the kind of thing that really, like, gets a frog in my throat and doesn't make me want to go ahead and do this sort of deal, because Tua's my guy. I really like Tua. I love him to bits. I know I've just contradicted that, but I think we know what Watson is. He's fantastic, and he could really elevate this offense, which kind of spluttered and stalled this year. And I think I truly believe, obviously, Tua, rookie, learning the game, coming off that, he's going to improve no end, but we still don't know whether he's going to get to that Watson level. So if you've got the opportunity, and I don't want to play the world, but if you've got the opportunity to flip this year's first round picks to Tua and a bit more compensation, then it just seems something that's like worth considering at the very least. Kwansi, I'll come your way.
I think when I heard about this rumour, my first instinct was to, as a fan, was to think, God, this Tua journey that we've been on for the best part of 2 years, and we feel like we've been through so much together, that we finally got the player that we've been after all this time, and all of a sudden there are rumours that he's going to be traded. I found it difficult to get my head around that as a fan. And I'm like you guys, I want to see it through to the end with Tua, down 10, 12 years down the line, 15 years, whatever it may be. So I'm very much pro continuing on that curve of the rebuild. I don't want to see the rebuild blown up after year 2.5, as Jason put it, because ultimately we'd have to lose all of that capital that we've got in the draft to get Deshaun Watson, and effectively that would almost end the rebuild. Absolutely. On the other side, I don't agree with the fact that losing that compensation is a massive deal from an offensive point of view, because we've seen exactly what Deshaun Watson can do in Houston without any true elite weapons. So I don't buy the argument that by trading away all of the two first round picks will have a negative impact on the offense, because, as I said, because Watson has proved he can do it. But it's the overall team rebuild that it would impact. And that's what I've got a particular issue with. So my thoughts are very much that we stay the course and we see it through with Tua right to the end of his career.
From a Texans point of view, my kind of thought on their side is, if that, for me, they're one of the weaker head coach positions to be looking at the moment. Obviously, you've got not a lot of draft capital, pretty depleted offensive roster other than Watson. I mean, if they believe in Tua, and they did their draft research on him, and they can pick up draft capital on that side, so maybe somebody's kind of pitching for that head coach vacancy and gets that capital to work with there. And I've just as we're kind of speaking now, just seen Andre Johnson's come out and said that the Texans are known for wasting players' careers, and Deshaun Watson should stand his ground and get out of Houston. So that's the kind of if that's the kind of stuff. And I know that Andre Johnson's been like brought into advise on the running of the Texans as well at some point. So if that's the way he's saying it, then you know he could stand his ground and force a trade for less capital. But yeah, I mean, Jason, I'll come back to you then, mate. If let's just say hypothetically, the Dolphins organization does decide to do the trade and stuff like, what do you reckon the future looks like for the next year or two? I mean, do you have to restructure that Watson contract? Is that a priority for you? And obviously, then we'll drag it back to the Tua side of things after that.
No problem. And again, I mentioned that, you know, I was going to do a little bit of a hedge, and this is where I guess that hedge comes back. So I'm glad that you brought it back. But look, if the Dolphins have a way to kind of, and I like to call this, you know, the Rob Peter to pay Paul plan. And that's almost what they did with that whole Josh Rosen deal. Before the trade, they made another trade, got some capital, made the trade to bring in the trade, you know? So if the Dolphins are doing some pre-work, and I'm not naming names because I know where a lot of people are going to go with this, but I'm just saying, if there's capital that's brought in from whatever side of the ball that's traded out, then potentially you could look at the side of the deals and say, did they really just get Deshaun Watson? They retained an 18th overall pick and maybe a third and a fifth or whatever. And then, much to Simon said, yeah, you could retain, you know, all those great, you know, players. And with the minimal picks, you could get around, you could find a way, you know? So yeah, I'll look at it if it's amazing, but it's not going to be amazing. They're going to fleece somebody. And I don't think it's going to be the Dolphins, because you look at some of the names that were available earlier on in the season that the Dolphins were quote unquote interested in. Sure, I'm interested in Ashton Martin, but for my price, which is a lot lower than anyone's going to sell it for. If anyone is dumb enough to give me for that, have at it. But if someone's going to give the other person more money, like they did for Todd Gurley, a Melvin Gordon, an Antonio Brown, remember the rumors that we were going to trade for Tom Brady? No, that was not going to happen. You know, so that's the thing with the Dolphins. We love to be considered, because you know what? We don't play in Minnesota. There's no tax. So everyone knows that stuff. And obviously with the Dan Marino shirt on Deshaun Watson, you thought that that was FedEx by Chris Greer. It wasn't. So we'll see. It's going to be very interesting. But yes, you know, there's ways to win with each direction. But the loyalty, the team build, you want to be a Steelers. You want to be a Packers. You want to be a Ravens. You don't want to be, unfortunately, what we've watched for the last two decades.
I'll jump in quickly just before Lee says what he was going to talk about. The ultimate question is comparing now with what the team would look like with Watson against what the team could look like in a year or two with Tua. And if you add a couple of really two or three elite weapons via the draft and free agency, and if Tua progresses in year two as a result of these additions, then the long-term potential is far greater for this team, I think, than it is with Deshaun Watson on his own without those elite weapons that ultimately we'd have to give up to get him.
Agreed.
Yeah, I think Jason just made a really good point as well about culture. I don't know what message this sends to the team that you've been building for 2 years, and the coaches have been saying, look, the best players will play, we're going to do this, they support the players. And then the first chance at a shiny new object to say, actually, you're out the door, bring in a new guy. I don't know if it fits. Again, I'm not saying that I wouldn't do it. I'm not saying I'd be upset if it happened. I am saying I wouldn't do it. I mean, I wouldn't be upset if it happened, but I don't see it. Also, you haven't seen it from the Dolphins' point of view. No one has said the Dolphins are interested in Deshaun Watson. Everyone just assumes they are. Like, it was only, 2 weeks ago they came out and said Tua's a starting quarterback. So, like, I think there's so many things to it. The other thing is, I've seen a lot of... I was watching some videos before we came online here tonight, and some of the talking heads in the States saying, oh, well, you can send Tua the other way and it's going to help with their rebuild. Tua has no value if you send him the other way, because you've diminished it by saying we're giving up after a year.
Right. That's exactly right. Look at this great, awesome object. I don't want it.
Exactly.
But take it.
What you've got's better, so I want yours. But by the way, mine's worth a lot. Like I say, you know, he's not worth nothing. But at the same time, I just think you damage the value that he has in any trade. Just to touch on Sunday Kills, I know it was out there with Xavier Howard changing agents. I saw it mentioned, you know, what about if you sent Howard as part of the package and that way you were able to keep retain some of the picks? How does Xavier Howard help a rebuild? Like, I love Xavier Howard, but Xavier Howard's got bad knees. He wants another new deal. Like, that just doesn't help the Texans at all. So I don't even think that's an option. But, you know, there's an awful lot of ifs and buts. I also think that the comparison for talent to talent right now on the Houston, the Texans and the Dolphins, like, it's Will Fuller, Devontae Parker. After that, everyone's, we're trying to replace all our guys. Yeah. It's just, I don't know. It's going to be an interesting few weeks.
He always talks so much sense. And look, I'm obviously playing devil's advocate and I'm very happy with the way the team's going and stuff like that. I just you know, great discussion point, isn't it? It just doesn't really happen very often. Obviously, get that opportunity to trade for a top five quarterback and let alone the Dolphins be linked with it. So we've got to talk about it. Lee?
The one other thing you said is, you know, what do you expect to happen now if you trade for Deshaun Watson? The simple answer to that is you have to win right now.
Right.
Because Exactly. Because that window just became super short because you've got a lot of money paying out on defense and then you're not going to have a lot of rookies. The beauty of the system right now is we've got a lot of rookie contracts on offense. We've got a lot of expensive contracts on defense. Now, as these contracts start to come up and start to get renewed, these ones are going to become draft picks on the defense and start. So you've got this cycle of how you can move money from the offense to the defense every year and keep it cap friendly. If you go into complete win now mode, it makes this a bit of a mess because you've now not got the picks coming in to replace the contracts that you're trying. You see what I'm saying?
It becomes like a risk management equation because right now the risk of staying put is minimal if it's zero because there's no change. But if you escalate it to that win now mode, like you said, Lee, I mean, it's win now. It's win one Super Bowl, get to three in 3 years, or else it's a failure. And you need money. You need money for Sanders, Gesicki, Van Ginkle, Ogba, Preston Williams, the rookie offensive line, you know, to his second contract, you know, if this works. But that's what you need to do in this year's NFL. Build a team, get to the Super Bowl on the third year or second year, God willing, of a rookie quarterback. But you bring that in because the Dolphins have the ability to make that an unbelievable, not standard, but just a masterclass in organizational build. And that is the goal. Get to a Super Bowl when Tua has a rookie contract. And then I'll give him $150 million if he gives me a Super Bowl ring.
I think that's perfectly summed up, hasn't it? And I think good debate, lads. I really like this one. It's one that's going to play out over the next few weeks if anything does move at all. One kind of, connected thing here is the offensive coordinator job. I've read that we're going to be looking into candidates towards the back end of this week. I just wanted to throw this out for a quick 2-3 minute discussion. Who would we like to see? I mean, I've got a list of names in front of me, but Lee, I'll chuck it your way to start with, and it's not Bill O'Brien, he's going to Alabama.
I just think it'd be hilariously funny if you bring in Bill O'Brien because it just completely puts to bed. We're not bringing in Deshaun Watson, or you can pair them back up and say it's the greatest screw job in history because you're bringing everything away, then for the quarterback to come and join you on a new team. This is hilarious, but I mean, there's so many names to talk about. Let's get into that.
Sweet, go on, Si.
Yeah, I'm not got any particular favourites personally, but the most important thing for me is to bring somebody in who can create a scheme and a playbook, if they change, of course, that's going to suit Tua and his development and his connection with the rest of his skill offensive players. That, to me, is the most important thing rather than the actual name of the coordinator itself, I feel.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, some like former head coaches' names out there, Anthony Lynn, Doug Peterson, Doug Marrone, Jason, any of those kind of ring your bell? Like, if you fancy them?
I mean, it's funny, you look at a guy with connections to the organization, whether they once played, Doug Peterson had a couple of minutes as a quarterback for the Dolphins, but there are connections too that you have to also consider. If the Dolphins are not going to go internal, which is probably a 25% chance that they might promote, but I would doubt that. But you got to look at some of the, maybe those older head coaches that were head coaches that could understand, you know what, Brian Flores is the coach. I'm going to now just fade into my role as offensive coordinator. Lynn would be fine. I'd be happy with that. And there's just a lot of people internally that work in this office now with the Dolphins that are just, you know, veterans, you know, your McKenzies of the world who are probably going to go into that Rolodex and go with someone who has at least 20 years experience in one way, shape or form running an offense. I'm not saying the second coming of Chan Gailey, maybe 20 years south. There's a lot of years to work with there, but of course, if you go with a hot shot coordinator, you know, you're going to have him for 2 years and then he's going to get the hot NFL opening. So maybe they go with the guy who was reserved to just say, you know what? Yeah. Head coaching didn't work out. I got 5 years left of me in an offensive coordinator role. We'll see.
Yeah. That's what I was going to add actually, Jason, if you get one of those hot up and coming coordinators, if they prove themselves and they're any good, then they're going to be off again in a year anyway. So with the thing is, and I talked about it on the pod last week, Jason, around how many changes we've had at that position over the last 4 years, even going back to the Adam Gase era, where I know he was he took play calling duties, but nevertheless they did have constant changes at that offensive coordinator role, and we need that stability and need that consistency. So I think I agree with you in terms of having an older guy who's been there and done it and isn't looking for the next big to be the next big thing would possibly enable that consistency to happen.
Yeah, no, I'll flip it your way. Talking of hot shots and stuff, I'm obviously got the view of these guys. But if you got someone like Ken Dorsey, who's the Bills quarterback coach at the moment, or someone like Clint Kubiak from the Vikings, someone like that, would that appeal at all? I mean, obviously with Dorsey, we've seen what he can do with Allen. Is that the kind of thing you want to see with Tua?
I'll be honest, I'm probably a bit like these guys. The name being hot really just doesn't do it for me, because we see it so many times, it doesn't work. Like, it's really a 50-50 shot. You might as well just take anyone else, because you don't elevate your chances of success anymore by taking the hot name. I definitely agree with what's already been said. Like, it's got to be someone who's willing to do exactly what they need to get Tua to play right. I don't want to come in and say, well, if Tua can improve here, he can fit my system. That's not good enough. Sorry, you're out the door. Because, like, there's a reason you've built the team this way. And if you can get someone who's got no ambition, that'd be even better. Like, someone who's got no intention of leaving, that'd be super. Do you know what I mean? Because it would fit into this role of, oh, look, we can build a sustainable winner because we've got guys. You've got a Josh McDaniel type. Someone who's willing to stay for a long period. Yes, he's going to try again, and he did try once, but there were long periods of time between, you know. They were good windows.
Yeah, sorry, I'll come to you one second. I was just going to say it's a real, real shame that Steve Sarkisian's got a new job this week, because that was my...
That would have been my amendment there. But you know what? He's going to run a college team.
That's it. Sorry.
The only head coach who is no longer a head coach that fits the criteria of potentially what the organization should look for, but we need to stay clear one. Yeah, you put it. You took the words right out of my mouth, Lee, was Adam Gase. And clearly we don't want to go back there, of course, but I just thought I'd mention it because I knew it would generate a few laughs.
Just out of interest, I don't know enough about college football. I kind of know, like, I watch a bunch of games, but I wouldn't say I have a deep knowledge of it. I would almost just as easily say, who's the quarterback coach at Alabama after Sarkisian? Because if he worked with Tua before, I'm just as happy to go with that as I am to take the Bills quarterback coach, because at least he's worked with Tua. Like, to me, that's... It almost seems like lazy to just go, oh, let's take someone from Alabama. And like in the draft, oh, well, why don't we go after Alabama players? They play with, you know, but...
It works.
It works.
It also just takes an element of risk out. You know, everyone knew that Mike Wallace was a decent player beforehand, but the one thing you cannot predict is chemistry.
Right.
But if you can take the one thing off the table that could possibly go wrong, I would almost rather take a slightly less talented player to take one that I know will fit than that slightly more talented player. Do you,
yeah, you know? I see what you mean. Yeah, yeah. I think the problem being that Sarkisian was quarterback and offensive coordinator, so he's a bit of a bummer there. But yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, I can definitely see it. Well, that's one definitely to watch over the next few days and stuff. And if it's going to be someone like Doug Peterson or something, I think we're going to have to wait in a while. He's obviously going to still get a couple of head coaching interviews at the very least, I would have thought. I don't think he's done enough to tarnish his reputation in that respect at all. So yeah, one to watch over the coming days and weeks. One other quick news thing, which I wanted to very quickly touch on. Si, I'll come to you on this one. Ryan Fitzpatrick unlikely to return with the Dolphins next year. Said he's, I read the other day, said he's going to be looking elsewhere for a contract. Sad news for you, obviously. A good player and really appreciated by this podcast for sure. But is that the right move, do you reckon?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, we love Fitz. He's a hero amongst the fans, isn't he? So got nothing but respect for the guy for what he's done over the last couple of years while he's been with the Dolphins. But as long as he remains with the team, there's always going to be that temptation to yank Tua out if he's not playing particularly well. And we've effectively got to remove that now. That's been done and dusted this season. I think next season we've just got to go with Tua regardless to ensure that he develops properly. And if Fitz is on the roster, there's always going to be that temptation to revert back to what they did last season. And so I feel as though they've just got to take that out of the equation and go with a genuine backup. Because let's face it, Fitz is not a genuine backup. He could quite easily start on loads of teams in NFL. So I think we've got to look in the direction of a true backup to fill that role rather than Fitz, I think.
Right, look forward to seeing him on the Patriots roster next year then.
Oh, no, you said it. You said it. Oh, no. That would break my heart.
For sure.
I think Fitz was a little bit hurt by the benching.
Yeah.
I think benching is the wrong term. Yeah, I mean, yeah, he was sent to the bench. But at the same time, it was almost... It was inevitable anyway. It wasn't like he was benched necessarily solely on performance. It was something that was always going to happen. And to be honest, had there been a preseason, we may not even have started the season, wouldn't have been a problem. I think that really hurt more than... I think he was, you know, the consummate professional. He went through the season, said all the right things, did all the right things. But I think when it really comes to it, if I've got the option to leave, like, I don't want to be treated like that again.
Right.
And I think that's more than fair. Also, I completely agree with what Simon said. Like, I'm completely training wheels off. I'm like, Tua, you're the guy. We're going to live or die by this. Because I'm not as a... I think NFL, anyone in the NFL, they're confident people. They believe in what they're doing. And by retaining Fitz again, you're essentially saying, we might have got this wrong. And I don't think you can work on the assumption that you've got it wrong. And I think even with the backup, I don't see them bringing in someone who started in the NFL before. I think you bring in a serial backup or you even go to rookie route and put someone in. But where there's no, it's completely unquestioned, two as you go.
And I know the quality of Fitz, we've already said he's a starting caliber quarterback. So, but how, looking at the opposite angle here is how many opportunities do you get to have a starting caliber quarterback as your backup? So that's the flip side. And that's what effectively they'll be losing if they don't re-sign Fitz or if he leaves.
Yeah, exactly. Jason, quick one from you. I mean, Lee just alluded to it. Do you go for the veteran backup or do you think a rookie draft pick, fifth, sixth, seventh round sort of thing comes in?
You do both. You know, you get a serial backup, a Colt McCoy. You know, a guy like a Chase Daniels, who literally has got the greatest job in the world, is to be a God forbid. And that's what we need. Not a guy who's got the ambition to start. And God bless Ryan Fitzpatrick. If he's got one more full year in him, which I really wished would have been 2019, in all honesty, you know, I really would have wished he had that full year in the sun. But you draft a guy in the fourth, fifth, sixth round, you know, you get all your positional players, you get your solidification of the lines, and then with your sixth overall draft pick, whenever that falls this year, you get a guy who will be a serial backup for the next 10 years. And then you got to get a third quarterback, so maybe someone gets signed in. So, yeah, you go both routes, and you got to let this season, if Tua is the guy, no, you look around the quarterback room, and he's got to almost laugh, like, I can't screw this up.
Sorry.
You've got to add that element of competition as well at the position, because you can't very well go in and not have that, because that's not going to push Tua to be better and to grow. Everyone is going to be set in their ways, and there's potential for those players to be complacent. So I think it's important to get enough competition in there to push them harder. And we saw it with Ryan Tannehill, didn't we? When he was there, he didn't have any serious competition at all throughout his time as a quarterback of the Dolphins, and look where he ended up. He wasn't really pushed, he wasn't really tested internally, and it didn't work for him. So I think whilst we agree there needs to be that serial backup as the backup, he needs to be good enough to be able to push to keep him on his toes.
Just slightly as a tangent as well, I would be all for finding another left-handed quarterback, because it's always been a real pet peeve of mine, not necessarily with the left-hand, right-hand thing, but when you've got a Cam Newton, for instance, Cam Newton in his prime, and his backup's nothing like Cam Newton, then it's almost a double whammy, because you lose a superstar quarterback, but at the same time, your offense has to change because he simply can't run the same stuff. You got Michael Vick, like you're not going to get another Michael Vick, but you need someone mobile. Like, you can't replace a mobile quarterback with a statue and vice versa. Do you know what I mean? You can't have like Lamar Jackson sitting behind Joe Flacco. It's just a complete mismatch. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's that sort of thing. I'd be, you know, get me as close as you can get to a great, get me a left-handed guy. So the offense, if he comes out, the offense essentially, it's obviously going to be scaled back, but can operate in a somewhat similar fashion.
It's easier said than done, though, I think, Lee, to be fair, because how long have we waited for a left-handed quarterback to appear in the NFL? I think the last one was Kellen Moore, wasn't it, when he was at the Jets? And we've waited so long now for one left-handed quarterback to come in. What are the odds of finding another one? A bit like London buses, aren't they? They're probably, you wait ages for one, Jason, and then two come along at once. But
I've never been across the pond. I can't wait. I will hail a bus with you gentlemen any day.
The other thing is, I wonder if, though, part of the reason you don't see many left-handed quarterbacks taken later in the draft is they're left-handed. People aren't willing to put the time in. Because if you get down to the back end of the draft, you want someone that's going to give, that has some upside, but also with the least amount of work possible, because you don't want to have to take it on. So I wonder if there is an opportunity there to do something. If not, just do what Tua's dad did. Teach someone to throw left-handed.
Well, maybe we could teach Tua to throw right-handed.
Maybe that's the way.
Because he is right-handed naturally, isn't he?
That's true.
Yeah. Yep.
When's Tua's brother coming out? Is he left-handed? Anyway.
No, he's not. He's right-handed. But I was just going
to
say,
Now that's the ultimate bet hedge for a dad, is to get a lefty and a righty quarterback.
I was just going to say, Dylan Gabriel out of UCF, just screams left-handed short quarterback with a big arm. So next year, when he comes out, there's your guy, there's your backup. Nice go over the news there, lads. That was loads of stuff to get through. We'll do what we can to do, which was the season review. Obviously, 10-6 season, very successful, apart from the last game where it kind of all went wrong. But, you know, still a lot to be proud of, a lot to take away from the season to build for next year. I won't give it any more than that, because I know we're going to be cramped for time anyway. So I'll throw out the first award, which is Team MVP. I'll kick it off for a change. I'll go Xavier Howard. I don't think you can go away from that. All the interceptions, all the pass breakups, Pro Bowl, All Pro, got the whole package. That's my MVP. Si, go your way first.
Yeah, and it's Simon Stats again, Andy. So I'm going for Jason Sanders as my MVP this year. And as Jason alluded to earlier, he had a 92.3% field goal conversion rate, which was the best in team history. He had 144 points for the season, which was tied for the franchise record with Orlando Mare. And he had 20 field goals from 40-plus yards this season, which was the most in the NFL. And you think back to the games at Vegas and Arizona in particular, where he was clutch and he won the game. And he's an all pro as well. So Jason Sanders gets my team MVP.
Good stuff. Jason, your way, mate.
I love how you got a special teamer and you got a defensive guy. So I'm going to go with an offensive guy. And I'm going to go with the second leading receiver in terms of catches and yards this year, and the leader in touchdowns, Mike Gesicki. because he balled out. He played with after a horrible injury. And you even saw it, that Raider game in the end zone, he put his arm out and immediately put his arm down. He's playing with tears. And that's a guy who's playing with a tear, not in something that is not his massive tool for catching a ball. So he had a terrific year, was about 100 and some odd yards off from Miami's all-time leading receiving record from a tight end, and was 2 touchdowns off. Both of those was Randy McMichael. So Mike Gesicki is my team MVP, if it's not Xavier Howard.
Yeah, fantastic player. Can't wait to see him develop further. Lee, mm-hmm. You've got the catch deciding vote.
No, I mean, I had Xavier Howard written down as well. It's too obvious. But at the same time, I'd love to say someone else just so – because we don't want his agent using this at the negotiating table. Like, he won the team award in the UK. But yeah, I mean, hey, it's game changing. 10 picks is, you know, those are absolute game changers every time. So
yeah, keep it going, man. Keep it going. Back to you then.
Just on that, it doesn't say a lot for the state of your team if you're going for a kicker as your MVP when you've gone 10-6. So, I mean, we all know Xavier Howard was superb this season. I just wanted to generate some conversation and think of something different, really.
No, he's a hell of a player, isn't he? We've been full of praise all season. So, yeah, it makes perfect sense. Lee, back to you, then we'll go reverse order. Rookie of the year for you, mate.
So, I kind of struggled a little bit because I liked the way a lot of the rookies played, I gotta be honest. But I mean, Solomon Kinley for me was an animal. The guy is an absolute animal. I just love everything about seeing him on the field. So I'm going there because I think this offensive line, we said it many times throughout the season, needed to make huge strides, and it did. I'm not saying it's the best offensive line in the league, but from where we were, we are so far ahead of where we've been in the last decade. And I think you can really attribute some of that to him. I think the game he missed as well, you saw the drop-off. You saw some struggles. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolute animal, definitely. Really, really liked watching him this year. Jason?
I'm going to go with Raekwon Davis. I mean, monster. Playing on the nose position, he still led all defensive linemen, outside guys included, in rookies and tackles, behind the number 2 pick, Chase Young. This guy's a monster. I mean, you could obviously know why Coach Flo is so happy when they drafted him. He's like 6'15". He's so huge. You have to create a new mechanism for him. So yeah, Raekwon Davis is my rookie of the year.
Yeah, I'm going to make that 2 votes for them in the second, but go on, Si.
I'm going to make it 3, actually. I had him down as my rookie of the year as well. I mean, I think back to when he was drafted and all of the experts were saying he was raw, he needed to be developed. And I think he's come on tremendously in his first season. So for me, he was a clear choice for rookie of the year.
Yeah, definitely. It kind of spoke volumes, because I know the coaching staff were worried when Godshaw got injured and Davis was having to come in, but he just didn't miss a beat. Did he? Looked really good. And we, at the start of the season, we kind of talked about the run game being a bit of a weakness and towards the back end, it really wasn't. I didn't think it was. It was very, much an improvement throughout the season. He was part of that, so I like that a lot. Go on, I'll kick off most improved player then, it's always a difficult one because when I was playing soccer or whatever you want to call it over here, most improved kind of went to that guy that was always a bit crap, and he was just like, you're just like, yeah, most improved. Well done. You've managed to play some games this year, but this is not the case here at all. So I'm going Andrew Van Ginkel. Obviously got his chance this year at the linebacker position, and he looked like a beast at times. Didn't he? He was so quick off the edge, key players against the likes of the Chiefs and the Raiders. I thought he looked really good. And to be honest, at the start of the season, I was thinking we definitely need to draft a linebacker high in this forthcoming draft. But I think his kind of emergence is might just halt that and might go linebacker in the mid-rounds again. So, yeah. Si?
Did you get most improved player very often, Andy, when you were playing soccer then? Are you hinting?
Actually, I got player of the season, players player of the season. I'm just a fantastic goalkeeper, mate. So it's awesome. All good. There you go.
A goalkeeper. I was going to give an honorary mention to Van Ginkel and actually Gesicki as well, because I think he has enhanced his reputation so much this year that we were talking about him in an earlier pod, Jason, and discussing whether he was actually in the elite category now. But my most improved player this year goes to Myles Gaskin, because he essentially came out of nowhere to grab that running back one role for the first game of the season. We didn't get any visibility of him during preseason at all, of course. So he almost came out of nowhere. And the other key thing to kind of trigger that as well was how many people drafted him in fantasy football. Probably nobody. So to go from absolutely nowhere to an RB1 role speaks volumes for his development and his progress, and he gets my vote for most improved player.
Nice. Jason?
These are all three guys that I would have mentioned, but I'm going to go with Van Ginkle. You know, Andy, I'm agreeing with you. This is a guy who, if he didn't get a statistic, he was doing something that helped somebody else. He was moving a 315-pound lineman backwards with ease. Guy's a baller. He also, I think, was second on the team in special teams tackles. So he's a two-phase player. And every one of those other guys could have been worthy for that award. But I'm going to go give it to AVG.
Did you guys see that photo the other day? They all went like shooting together, and Van Ginkle just looked absolutely like a massive psycho. So yeah, definitely don't want to be facing him. And
very nice guy, but yeah, you don't want to mess with a guy who could call in a gator like that.
For sure, for sure. Lee?
Yeah, I hate to be unoriginal, but I had Van Ginkle written down as well. I think if nothing else, he's just got such a motor. He's always going. Just all the time, he's around the ball. He's in on the plays. It's just always there. And I think that's great. I think it's exactly the sort of player Brian Flores wants. I think, you know, beginning of next season, when he goes into the room and says, these are the players I want on my team, he's just got a picture of Van Ginkle on the wall and says, I want guys who play like this. And actually, I think that helps players like Raekwon Davis, because one of his big problems was coming out of college, people questioned how good his motor was. And, you know, we saw his performance this year was stellar. So, yeah, I think it's a sort of acknowledgement of the coaching staff and how well this team has done. But, yeah, Van Ginkle is so much fun to watch.
He stands out, doesn't he, actually, Lee, as well, when he's playing. You can recognise his blonde flowing locks a mile away, can't you? So you know when he's racing down the field with the ball, was against the Rams, wasn't it? That was,
yep.
It was so obvious it was him, and it's good to see his development.
Nice, yeah, good consensus there then. Best free agent, Lee, you can kick us off, mate.
So, yeah, I went a little bit left field here. And I'm going to say Byron Jones, because I think Byron Jones is partly responsible for why Xavier Howard gets 10 interceptions. People didn't seem to want to throw at Byron Jones. They were happier to take their chances with Howard, even though he kept making interceptions. It's a really interesting thing that sort of played out all the way through the season, that people were still going at him. I think it's because now and again, Xavier Howard will give you a 20-yard pass, he'll give up a 30-yard pass. Yeah, he'll come out and get an interception two plays later, but you're taking the chance that I can get some yards before that happens. So yeah, I think I'm desperately a Byron Jones in here somewhere, because I think his play has been so underrated. Yes, you know, he got paid a lot of money in the offseason, but yeah, I think it really had an impact on this team.
Yeah, now that pick against the Bills, if it had gone, like the game had gone the other way, what a pick that would have been to kick us off, man. Jason, how about you?
I love the way Kyle Van Noy played. I know earlier in the year people criticized, you know, maybe just his overall aspect to the game, but speaking of motor, he's a leader, and he was extremely productive. Him, Baker, Van Ginkle, I think the first triple linebacking group in quite a while to get five sacks plus. So we have a linebacking core that was a major weakness if you could look at them last year. So I think Van Noy and the two Vans, Van Noy and Van Ginkle, you got to love that.
Yeah, for sure. Shout out to that guy who called Lee out for saying that we we'd trade Baker last week, which was quite a take. But no, all good.
Yeah, I definitely misspoke, because I shouldn't have used the word cut. It should have been traded. But at the same time, you know, it's definitely an interesting discussion, because I think going into the beginning of last season, if someone had said you're going to trade Raekwon McMillan, we would all throw our hands up and he said, no way. There's no way that happens. So it's going to be a fun few weeks with some interesting stuff to discuss.
That's it, man. So my best free agent, I was going to go with Van Noy, but I'll go Ogbar to keep the juices flowing. I think kind of best pass rusher we've had since Cameron Wake retired. I just thought he brought a bit of a different edge this year. Like for that, there was a run of games middle of the season where he was amongst the best pass rushers in the league. Really feared coming off the edge and just driving his man back into the quarterback, even if he wasn't getting the sack as well. And made some big plays that won us games in those early days of Tua starting. So big fan. I don't know whether we'll re-sign him to a massive deal. I don't know whether he's that good to get massive money from the Dolphins, but I think it kind of shows that they got that we can generate pressure on the quarterback, and if not him, then somebody else will slot into that role in that scheme. Si?
Yeah, I've got Emmanuel Van Ogba as well as my best free agent signing. 9 sacks. 10.5 tackles for a loss, which was interestingly second on the team behind. Any guesses? Zach Sealer with 11.5, I think, for the season. But nevertheless, 10.5 TFLs and 9 sacks gets my best free agent signing. Although I do want to give an honorary mention to Ereck Flowers, because all too often all we hear about in terms of offensive linemen is the negative stuff. Jesse Davis, how he's a turnstile all the time. Every week we seem to slag him off, don't we? But you don't hear anything about Ereck Flowers. And Ereck Flowers, as long as you don't hear his name called in the game, you must know he's doing something pretty solid. So honorary mention for him.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, I think we'll flip back to... Sorry, I realised I went first there, sorry, rather than you in the order, but never mind, we'll rectify that now. Best moment I've got as the final one. Obviously, I'll kick off with the Raiders. Things have been so many good moments this year, and like so many like the X interceptions, and you know all that kind of the excitement that it generated throughout the season. So many to choose from, but obviously the Raiders moment for me stands out as the best one. You know, what a play by Fitz, and hopefully it's Tua making those moments next year as well. Si?
Yeah, I was going to go for that one as well, actually, because best moment of the season is always going to be now on a par with the Miami Miracle, of course. And that was the closest we got to a Miami Miracle moment this season. And it kept our playoff hopes not alive, but they were better as a result of that last gasp win. So, yeah, have they given that player a name, by the way? Did they give it any special...
I've been going with the Miracle on the Strip, but I don't think it's taken off.
That was a tumbleweed, Jason, I think.
Not good.
But yeah, the Vegas play was my moment of the year.
Nice. Jason, anything different your side?
To make it a different play, you know, because that is the moment of the year. It's hard to do anything else. But for me personally, if you all want to get a fun visual of me swinging off a chandelier, it was Andrew Van Ginkle's interception return. I think I was waking up the neighbors in all time zones for that one.
Nice. Lee?
And I'm going to go even further back. And I mean, like you guys have said, you know, the Vegas play is the obvious one. But the moment we drafted Tua.
Yeah, that was a good moment, man.
Because there had been so much leading up to that, not even just in the last 2 years, but even in the last few weeks going into it, trade rumours and people saying this and that. And then when the trade, you know, we didn't make any moves on the day and that pick came up like, uh-oh, are they not going to do it? Like, and it was just such elation and relief and so many emotions. So yeah, no, I thought that was great. But yeah, obviously the Vegas moment was awesome.
On that note, actually, Lee, that moment he was drafted, which Jason was in the very early hours for us when that moment came through, I had nobody to celebrate with. I don't until I met Andy and Lee on the podcast, and we'd never met before we did our first episode, Jason. I didn't know any other Dolphins fans locally who I could celebrate with. So I was jumping around in my PJs in my lounge on my own.
That's my whole life. I'm from New York. I'm from Jet Country. I went to college in Buffalo in Bills Country. We're brothers from another continent.
Well, this year will be the same when we get Devonta Smith, but we'll come on to that. Sorry, the last one you wanted to go with was, I don't need to put you on the spot, but it's a bit of negativity with biggest bust of the season.
Sorry, Andy.
No, go on, mate. I'll hand over to you to go first.
Yeah, I've got a few, actually, surprisingly enough. I mean, you've got the obvious ones. And again, an honorary, if you can call it honorary mention, to Howard, Breeder, they're the two that stand out. I said before the season, Malcolm Perry might be our biggest bust, and he hasn't exactly set the world alight. But my nomination for this particular category is Preston Williams, because I know he's been injured for half the season and he only played 8 games. But if you look in those 8 games, he only had 18 catches, which isn't a lot for a supposed wide receiver too. I know he got 4 touchdowns and his average yards per play was the longest on the team, but 18 catches for a wide receiver too is very disappointing. And I just hope we haven't got another DVP on our hands with somebody who's going to be injury prone. Because otherwise, if he is, I can see his roster spot being in jeopardy next season.
I felt like there was a fair few crucial drops there as well, wasn't there? There was that one against the Bills, I'm going to go Antonio Callaway, because there were several points this season when we were like, yes, Callaway is off the IR and he's ready to take us to some downfield threat. And I don't even know how many catches he had, maybe 5 or across the season. So, yeah, I'll go him to stay away from Jordan Howard, who was way too exciting. And I got way too excited about that signing before the season. So I won't embarrass myself any further there. Jason?
I'm guilty of the Jordan Howard, you know. I thought that he was going to be great. I thought that he was going to be, you know, that chain mover. So, yeah, I will say him. I agree with what you're saying, Simon, on Preston Williams. He has a lot of work to do. He does. But he's got to work on the drop issues. So, you want to see him do better. But I guess, Jordan Howard. Major disappointment there.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm just going to go with the other running back, Matt Breeder, because, I mean, hey, to be honest, other than Armin and Gaskin, you could just throw all the running backs in there because they were pretty abysmal. I'm pretty sure some of us could get some yards if we were thrown in. You know, Matt Breeder there late in the season is standing on the sideline. He's not even got a helmet. He's not even ready to go in. Do you know what I mean? He just offers absolutely zero. Do you know what I mean? With the draft pick you gave up, you might as well have just drafted anyone and taken a chance.
Right. I said to these guys, Jason, a couple of weeks back when the team were holding their Wednesday media availability, and Matt Breeder was one of the players that was put forward for his Q&As with the media. And I was on that call, Jason. I don't know whether you were as well, but he got one question from the media and it was how Habib asked a fairly relevant question and he answered it. And then that was it. There was no other questions from any other media member. And that kind of reflects, I don't know whether it's a reflection on what Lee said around his standing around on the sideline, not looking too bothered, but he did have a grump on after that. He just quickly got up and went, and it was quite amusing. I felt sorry for him in a way, but it was a bit embarrassing from his point of view.
What's the question? Why are you still here? the potential was so high for those two. It's just, you know, such a disappointment. I think that makes us also kind of bitter. Do you know what I mean? Because
very.
Even if one of them has succeeded, you kind of forgive the other one and say, look, you took 2 cracks at it and 1 doesn't pan out. Fine. That's why you have so many draft picks, you know, in case they don't all go, you know, they're not all going to pan out. But, you know, they were so disappointed.
That hurt.
It did. Yeah. They did. And I think that's kind of, we'll come on to it in future episodes on the draft, but I think that's the one thing that might hold this coaching staff back from spending a high round pick on a back, is the kind of production from Gaskin compared to the big money signs we made there. But we'll discuss that in the coming weeks. Si, is there any more that I've missed that we want to do? Or
not in terms of awards, no. That was all I had on the list.
Cool. Coming to the end then, guys. Quick 2-minute drill to finish us off here. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to look at the 2021 opponents yet. Just want to quickly get your thoughts on that. One opponent maybe that you're looking forward to seeing the most. And and we'll finish it there. Si, over to you to start.
Yeah, Houston at home. It's potentially one for the calendar, isn't it? I looked at the schedule earlier, or not the schedule, but the list of opponents, and I've got as actually my early prediction is a 10-6 record. Couple of things stand out for me is that I'd penciled in defeats, all of our six defeats against playoff teams from this year. But from a fan perspective, what game is going to be chosen as a potential home game in London? Obviously, they were coming over last year, Jason, weren't they? Rumoured to be playing the Seahawks in London. Right. So which game is it going to be this year? Don't think it will be Atlanta because they were also scheduled to have a home game in London and we're playing them at home rather than away. Don't think it will be the Jets because we've already played them in London already, so I can't see them doing a repeat there. One thing that did stand out as well is that we're playing the Jags away, who are, of course, they will most likely have two games in London potentially. So maybe there's potential for a Dolphins doubleheader in London this season. Who knows?
Oh, wow. That wouldn't be bad.
That'd be massive. And it could be Tua versus Lawrence. That'd be obviously national championship repeat. So big draw there. I'm going to go with the Bucks because I think it's in Tampa. Is it in Tampa, Si? Am I right?
Yeah.
That's probably one of the ones I'm most likely to get to as a Brit fan if we can get over there with COVID and stuff, just because obviously I can leave the missus at Disney World and then just pop over to Tampa and then go back.
Good planning.
So that's mine. But I also used to have a soft spot for the Bucks, as you can probably tell by the Jameis Winston jersey behind me, but that's obviously moved on now. Jason, going your way?
I am going to look forward to the Baltimore Ravens game because that's going to be like a litmus test game, you know, a revenge game. They never play the Ravens well. Hopefully they will in 2021.
Yeah, big test of us there, wasn't it? Lee, finish us off, mate.
So I actually had the same as you, Andy. I'd gone with the Bucks, but for a slightly different reason. Yes, yes, as soon as I saw it, I was planning a trip to Tampa as well. But to me, there's some kind of symmetry between the two teams. You know, they both kind of, like, we're one win behind them this year. They're in the playoffs. But, like, come next year, we could be buses traveling opposite directions. Do you know what I mean? I think, you know, if everything goes according to plan, that should be a really good matchup. And also, I say, a lesson in team building. You can go and buy a bunch of old veterans and have a super short window, or you can go our route and look good for a decade to come.
Nice, yeah. And obviously the Brady implication there as well. Cool. Well, thank you very much, Jason, for joining us again, mate. Really, really nice to have you with us, and always welcome whenever you want.
Yeah, just before we draw to a close, Jason, I just wondered if you'd want to spend a minute or two giving your food relief program a little plug. Plus, can you share with the listeners where they can find you on Twitter and all that sort of malarkey?
Oh, sure. No, I appreciate that. And, you know, you guys were good enough, you know, to participate in the food relief drive, which we did a couple of weeks back. Actually, it was the day of that Raiders game, which made that literally one of the greatest days of my Dolphin life, you know, through a total collaborative effort on multiple continents with all of our fans. We were able to raise $3,000+, which the organization matched. So over about $6,130, we're going to South Florida small businesses to help feed, you know, and provide meals for those who are in need of them. And, you know, it was just our pleasure as a fan site to just give back to a team that's been giving us so much for all of, you know, a season and plus organization does so much outside of football. So I appreciate you mentioning that, Simon. And yeah, FinManiacs, you know, you can find me on my Twitter handle at Orange Aquaman, and a lot of great stuff going on in FinManiacs throughout the offseason into next year.
Nice one. Thank you very much then, mate. And thank you very much for listening, guys. Not sure how frequently we're going to be with you in the off season, but we'll definitely have some episodes for you, some special guests and some competitions as well. So I'll finish us off there. Thank you very much.
Thank you.